Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic, man.
It's gotten chilly.
Oh, it was. I was not prepared this morning.
With the frost?
Yeah.
And they're talking snow warnings, even for
this weekend or something? Yes, so I saw some little video clips on the Weather Channel. Quebec has snow. And not all of Quebec, obviously, but some regions. And they're saying that Ontario this week is going to get some snow, but it's going to warm up again next week. So,
yeah. But, yeah, whatever.
I thought winter was going to hold off until like December, January this year.
No, I'm still saying we might get a little bit, but it's going to be nice up until the end, at least the end of November.
The end of time?
The end of time. No snow from now till the end of time.
Yeah.
No more tobogganing. No more skidooing.
I know, right?
No more winter camping for you, Derek, till the end of time.
Okay.
Whatever. I got up there this morning and started up the truck, and oh, that's frost on my window.
It's a little frosty.
Yeah, gave it a good dose of windshield wiper fluid because I didn't feel like opening the garage door to, and gonna, dig out my window scraper. Whatever. Once that was gone, I just give me time to choose the channel of music I want to listen to.
Yeah.
By the time I'm done that, my window is defrosted. It was only the windshield, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So how come my side windows never fog up or free? Like... It's the front windshield,
yeah,
but not my side windows.
I think like, it's just depending. It's like it's the way the moisture falls out of the air when the temperature drops and comes out of condensation. It's falling on the car and collecting as ice or frost, and then other conditions.
Listen, pal, don't get all sciencey on
it'll
me.
It'll come in as a cloud, and depending on other conditions, get the vertical surfaces as well.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. I don't have a seat warmer, but I do have a side mirror defrosters.
Yes, so do I. You're handy.
That's probably one of the more handy items that came on my truck.
I know, right?
Yeah. So, we didn't talk about it 2 weeks ago, and last week was a bit of a weird show.
Yeah.
Because it was all about Kevin Callan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, we didn't... For the past... Five years?
We've been talking about Fat Bear Week.
Fat Bear Week. Cocaine Bear. So Fat Bear Week happened October 2nd to the 8th. We usually follow it every year because it's neat.
It's interesting, yeah.
It is. You watch the Katmai National Park there, I've been saying provincial parks so much lately. Yes, we've taken over Alaska.
Yes, yes.
Alaska's now a province.
It's ours now.
Right? Yeah, we just took it. If you look at the Katmai National Park, Brooks River, the waterfall there is all the grizzlies and brown bears there all gather there and they eat the salmon running up and whatnot. And every year the bears get fatter and fatter fatter. So they have these votes, and they put the bears against each other. Is it going to be bear A or bear B?
Yeah.
And they've got either a number or a name, or a name and number.
Yes, and it's based on people's opinion. People vote on it.
Yeah.
They're voting for a fat bear. It's not like who is the biggest. It's like who they perceive as the biggest
Make my butt look big? Then post it.
Does this salmon make my butt look big?
Yeah. So... and then there's, you know, the different rounds, and then they get whittled down till there's finally two bears left.
Yes.
The winner for the second year in a row is Grazer. She's a big female bear.
Yep.
And for the second year in a row, she beat Chunk.
Yes, they were head to head. So it's like March Madness for basketball, but this is for bears. And so they have the ladder and you know, as it breaks down to who wins what rounds. And anyways, it was down to Grazer and Chunk again this year, second year though. The two are up against each other, and Grazer won
70,000 votes versus 30,000.
Very definitive.
Mm-hmm.
Very definitive.
Now
it's been closer in the past sometimes.
A little bit of. Now, a couple years back, there was a thing about people stuffing the ballot box.
Yeah.
People were voting more than once. And they figured out, wait a minute, something's not right here. And they figured out people were stuffing the ballot box.
Yeah.
This year, there's a couple of things that happened. Oh. Non-people related.
Yes.
The Bears have, you know. So, in July, Grazer, who won this year,
yeah,
had two cubs. The two cubs were swept over a waterfall and right into the path of Chunk, the one she just beat. Chunk is, they say, is the most dominant bear on the river, attacked the two cubs, and the one of the cubs died of its injuries.
Yes.
The other one, however, is following in Mom's footsteps, and he was a contestant in this year's Junior Fat Bear.
Did they say what how he placed?
No.
I forgot to look it up.
I never looked at that.
I forgot to look it up.
I got into the, oh, he's joined. Mm-hmm. But he didn't win.
No.
He was a contestant.
Okay.
But he didn't win. So, yeah. So the, so her Grazer beating Chunk was sort of a bit of a bittersweet victory.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So now the other cub is going to grow up and
become,
fight for that title.
Become a prize fighter like his mother.
Right? See? Now, the other thing that's happened, let's talk about the bear Otis.
Oh, yes.
Otis won the inaugural, it was Fat Bear Tuesday back in 2014.
Yeah.
It, as it got bigger, it became Fat Bear Week. So he went on to win it the title three more times, last time being 2021. He became the unofficial symbol for Fat Bear Week. They estimate he was 28 years old.
Do you count rings for that on a bear?
I don't know. His teeth were rather stubbed. age is creeping up on him. And previous years, he would sit in the river patiently waiting for fish. And sometimes they'd look over and he was snoozing. So, yeah. I mean, I know people that do that, waiting for dinner at the on the couch. And they look over and they're having a pre-dinner snooze, followed by a post-dinner snooze. Last few years, he's been showing up late to the Brooks River, worrying fans, because he's got a fan base. People go, oh, where's Otis? And they do. You know which bear is your favorite.
Yep.
Exactly, and people look for them, right? This year, Otis did not show up at the river.
Mm-hmm. They've been seeing him arriving later and later each year.
Yeah.
He's getting old. Maybe he has different hunting grounds or whatever.
Right. So they say we may likely never know Otis's fate as Katmai covers such a huge area.
Park. Massive park.
It's possible he changed feeding areas after 20 years. And it's possibly he succumbed to old age. 30 years is pushing the limits of a brown bear's typical
life. That's pretty lifestyle. Elderly for a bear.
So it's like a 95-year-old guy coming to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening. So they don't know. I mean, he could be out there and just, they said that maybe he's just doesn't, he's finding a quieter feeding ground.
Maybe.
So there's not, he's not having to put up with bigger bears, right?
Yeah.
So, and then maybe next year he shows up again or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever he's gone, Otis, the fattest of the fat bears, will continue to be a supersized inspiration to his fans.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So that's the second thing that happened in Bear Week this year.
It was the third
thing
year.
That happened, again, bear related. It was delayed a day, I think it was, getting the voting in that up this year. Bear 469 and Bear 402.
They were having a, it was in the, I saw the, watched the video. It was off of the area at the creek.
Yep.
And they, people at first thought they were playing, but then it seemed to become serious.
They said it was a lengthy and violent fight. And people, it was right on the live webcam, so people were watching it.
Yes, so people were watching, and they let the parks rangers know. I said, hey, you got to start watching the video. There's something going on.
Yeah, and they did. Bear 469 eventually ended up killing Bear 402.
Yeah, 402 drowned.
So after that, after the fight, 469 dragged 402's body and stashed it, which bears do.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get an animal, like a deer or whatever, and then they'll stash it for and come back later.
Yeah.
Now, they say as popular as Fat Bear Week is, it is still nature fighting for survival.
Yes.
Right? As much as you want to say, oh, look at those cute bears all eating the salmon, and we're going to have this little contest, see who gets to be the fattest. It's still nature. They're still fighting for survival, and things like that happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, you said...
So I...
Was it Chunk?
Yeah, so
you read somewhere.
I had read during the initial report, and I listened to a podcast where three of the park rangers were discussing the event. And so there's one bear that kind of runs through a couple of these stories. So Chunk, his name is 32 Chunk, or Bear 32. Mm-hmm. So Chunk, who was in the rematch this year for the fattest bear, he not only did he beat and eventually kill one of Grazer's cubs, but he ended up taking over the kill that 469 had stashed in the woods. So Bear 402 ended up becoming food for not just Bear 469, but for so 402 fed 469 and Chunk got into it too, and he took over the kill.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's natural. This is not anything, you know, when I was listening to the podcast and a couple, there was a lot of people upset about it, but what are you going to do?
It's nature.
They're bears. It's just part of nature. It's going to happen.
Right? It probably happens all the time off camera.
Yeah.
As much as you don't want to see it. I mean, you want that. Hey, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Fat Bear Week, let's keep it clean, people.
Nothing below the belt.
Right.
So park rangers did say that they are not going to do, because they
can't do anything.
They're not going to do anything about Bear 469. It's natural. And they had to reassure people that, hey, this is something that is nature. This is not, you know, neighbors fighting neighbors. This is bears. This is wild animals.
They're fighting for their survival.
Yes.
When it comes to the bears out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So... Anyway, Fat Bear Week, way to go, Grazer, 2 years in a row. Let's make it three-peat next year. Woot, woot. you know, it's pretty cool to watch it.
It is. It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to see it all play out. And like, it's normally a lot of fun to watch, but sometimes other events kind of intervene and changes the feeling and the color of the event. But still, it is interesting to watch Fat Bear Week.
Well, like I say, the winner, the missing, the dead.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun. It sounds like a spaghetti western.
Yes.
Tis the season.
Yes, tis the season.
Keep your eyes open. Tis the season for witch paddles and giant pumpkin paddles. We've mentioned the witch paddles there a couple weeks ago, but and there's a lot of them happening, too. All you got to do is Google it.
We're 2 weeks out from Halloween, and so you're going to start seeing events pop up in your local areas because it's become...
All the fall festivals.
Fall festivals, and so you're going to see a lot of witches and warlocks out on stand-up paddle boards and whatnot. So that's another fun thing of the season.
And if you are out on your paddle boards doing the witch paddles and you see somebody dressed up in Christmas stuff... You are, by law, allowed to knock them off the board. Yes. You're allowed to gang up and gang beat Santa Claus or the Grinch. Because, no, it's not you wait till after Halloween.
Yeah.
You wait for your own holiday.
You might have to do it in Florida, but no Christmas paddling. No Christmas tree paddling before Halloween.
Right? November 1st hits, all gloves are off.
Exactly.
So, the giant pumpkins, people hollowing those out and having their races.
I've seen that. So, I saw one where, it's very rare to see them this big. So, the guy, I wish I could remember where the guy is, but he grew a 1,976-pound pumpkin, and it was droopy and smushy just the right way that when he carved it, he made Jabba the Hutt, and it looks like Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, does it?
It's like, wow, that's a big pumpkin.
I would like to get one of those, because you see the day after Halloween, all the, like, a garbage day.
Yeah.
All pumpkins, the pumpkins out, right? I would love to see all these pumpkins out, and then this, like, 1,000-pound pumpkin.
the garbage man
is going to pull up.
No.
Yeah, just keep on going. Yeah. And I'm going to call and complain. So lots of areas have different paddling events this time of year to celebrate the fall season. Just be careful. Make sure you're warm. Make sure, you know, if it's a cold day, dress for it.
I know, right? Depending on your latitude.
Yeah. The witch paddles and giant pumpkin paddling. I don't know that I'd want to actually sit in one of those. They'd have to be so dry.
You'd have to be in a wetsuit.
I'd have to be in like a dry garbage suit. Bag or something because, ew, they're slimy.
Yeah, I know.
Slimy. Another thing we've been talking about, so we always talk about Fat Bear Week. We always talk about the witch and pumpkin paddles.
Yeah.
The Klamath River Dams.
We've been talking about this for a few years now.
For a few years now.
When did they start? They started the plans for this,
it's been in the works for ages.
Yeah.
Years.
And it's taken them like 5 years to tear everything down.
Yep. So along the Klamath River, which runs from Oregon to the California coast, largest dam removal project in U.S. history was completed on October 2nd. Milestone has large implications for endangered salmon, other wildlife, entire ecosystems, and the people living in the area. That's the one thing they said is like, you know, these dams have been up for like 100 years and it's changed the landscape and they want to bring it back to how it was once the dams are gone, to the point where they were harvesting seeds for local
grasses
and trees and stuff like that so they can repopulate the banks, right? Scientists with a nonprofit California Trout capture images of a 2.5-foot-long Chinook salmon migrating upstream for the first time in more than 100 years. Yet scientists stress that it will take many more years to fully restore the ecosystems affected by the dams. They had an interview with this 97-year-old indigenous fella who said, you know, when we were kids, we used to eat this.
Yeah.
Right? And then slowly they all disappeared.
Yeah, exactly. So when you have a big hydro project like that, you can't put in a big enough fish ladder. It's just not going to work. So it stops the fish from migrating.
I guess no one ever thought of like a fish like catapult or something. they swim in and when it's so big, all of a sudden.
They do have fish elevators.
See? Now we're talking.
For a couple of years, we used them in Bowmanville, and it's this long tube where it's a combination. It's like a big white straw. They stick the fish in one end. It somehow either suctions or blows the fish through up above the dam. And so we have a proper fish ladder now.
Why? Because they couldn't get it to press the button on an actual elevator?
Fish, you got to push the button yourself.
You got to push that. You want to spawn, you get off your butt and you press that button. So the dams are now out and they are full on into the restoration phase.
Now you got to wonder what goes through a fish's head, like a Chinook salmon swimming. It's like, oh,
just keep swimming.
Where did this come
just
from?
Keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
This is a new river. It has been never for a new river.
Right? I mean, still, how many generations of salmon have
missed
come
out.
And gone
yeah.
and not gone up those rivers?
Yeah.
And does that instinct still make them go to, like so far up a river?
They do say that fish, generation by generation, do head. But they've tagged them, and they do know that some salmon like go back to where the breeding grounds are. Oh, they have a traditional breeding ground,
definitely,
and or egg laying area in the river. But so this will be. They'll have to. They say it's going to take a few years because these fish have to learn their own patterns on this new river to the fish, right?
You know, it makes you wonder if there's some sort of fish sonar, radar, magnetic lure, or something
communication system
that makes them go to a new space.
Right? I think they just—it's instinctual. If it's running water, we're going to swim upriver. Like so maybe they have a memory of where they came from, but I think for the most part they're
tracking
none of the, up.
Yeah, none of the new
going up water.
None of the existing ones would have actually been up.
No, they wouldn't have been up there.
That far, right?
There's not too many 100-year-old salmon out
well,
there.
There is one salmon I remember swimming up there as a kid. Swim, salmon, swim. Yeah. So, no, they're kind of cool to see how many years it actually takes before they actually start making it to the general location of where the original
100-year-old
spawning grounds were.
Be very interesting.
Speaking of, have you walked your rivers lately?
No.
Very few salmon left.
Oh, yeah?
And there wasn't as many, there isn't as many dead ones as there have been in previous years.
Hmm.
So, I don't know if maybe I just missed the removal bits.
Yeah. The more that they do die, like I watched a video, it was, I saw it on before I came here tonight, and they were showing the Klamath area and Browns Creek, what's it called? Browns River? No, whatever. Anyways, they showed all the fish kill. Mm-hmm. So there's thousands of dead fish on these flats, and they've spawned and died.
Well, when I was up on the Mission Pecotin last year, and I hit their Thanksgiving, and they had spawned, and there was hundreds and hundreds of dead
mm-hmm.
fish just all everywhere. Across.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Floating on the banks, on the bottom. It's phenomenal, like the die-off after spawning. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's natural. It happens. It's just the circle of life.
Yep.
But yeah, it for a couple weeks, like always in the fall after the fish runs, it's and on the creeks stinky. At home. It's very stinky, yes.
I must say I have lucked out with my last three dogs. None
no rolls.
Of my last three dogs are dead fish rollers. The amount of people I see, I am not going to the river because, and they're heading towards the river. And the first thing, are there still dead salmon down there? Yeah, there's a few. Okay. And they turn around and go the other way and they're looking at their dogs because you know what those dogs are doing.
Exactly.
So from now on, no, all the fish are gone. Curse you.
Yes. I had beagles that did that. They just didn't matter what it was. If it was dead, if it was horse poop, it was whatever. They just rolled in it.
Yeah. Well, Mike Burns, Willow.
Oh, yeah. She loves it.
She loves poop.
She loves fish. She loves poop. Oh,
fish as well?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's got a roller.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got a roller.
Yeah. I wonder what it is, the instinct of a dog that makes it want to, like, I've seen my dogs do it. I've seen Willow do it. And they just kind of get in there and ear down, cheek in it, and then pushes with their back feet and slides through it.
Do the fish slide.
Do the fish
electric
slide.
Fish slide.
Do no, the fish slide.
Athena looks at, sees a dead fish and steers clear. Now, mind you, she was in the river.
Yeah.
And a big one went right by her. She couldn't get out fast enough.
What was that?
This thing was a good 2 feet long.
It's a monster.
And, yeah, it was a good size one. And it just came zipping right by her. And he's like, that's a giant. Nope.
I'm out of here.
So I've lucked out three dogs in a row now.
Nice.
None of them were rollers. Awesome. It's a great feeling.
Well, the worst part of it is if you happen to have driven to the river or wherever you went, it's like, oh.
Then you got to bring them home.
In the car.
Yes. Yeah. Why is your dog on the roof, sir? Well, officer, it's like this. We had a conversation, speaking of being out on the trails, about ticks.
Oh, yes.
And how everybody's like, ticks, 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 ticks. Well, I was at the deer or the dog leash-free area. And there was dog walkers there. And some of these dog walkers have like 12 dogs with them.
Oh, wow.
And there's a picnic table. There's a place called the Bowl. Mm-hmm. It's like, basically, it looks like a bowl.
Yeah.
And everybody gathers at the bottom of the bowl. And it's a big meeting place. The dogs can run. It's all dirt and, you know, sand, that sort of stuff. And there's a picnic table so people can stand around while their dogs go nuts and whatnot. But there is dog walkers there. And they got a few of the dogs up on the picnic table. Picking ticks.
Oh.
Saying they're really bad if you're going through the grass. But if you're in the woods, nothing.
Yeah.
So we always stick to the woods usually anyway because more to see and hide in the woods, right? And, of course, Kevin, when we were up doing the trail, the Frontenac there, he says, make sure you do the tick check, do the tick check, do the tick check, do the tick check, do the tick check.
Yeah.
Not a tick. Not a single solitary one. So I'd said, between you and Kevin, like everybody's paranoid about ticks.
Yeah.
Tell Derek, because he's done 10 trails now.
Yeah.
Tell Derek I came back with 7 ticks.
7.
5 embedded and all black-legged ticks.
Oh, no.
Yuck.
Wow.
So Kevin Callan got ticked.
Yeah.
But then he takes them off.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets ticked off.
Ah!
Ah! Ah! Ah! Ah! It's the entire reason I told you to tick, just so I could get that joke out. No. No, you and Kevin were constantly about the ticks and all that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I started seeing them at the dog park, and then I saw the message from Kevin, and, oh, maybe ticks are real.
They're not a
figment. I thought you were lying
to
me.
They're not a figment of everybody's imagination.
Yeah. No, they're still out there. I mean, this is September, and they're still out there. You know, it's not like the cool weather isn't.
Yeah, and the compounded factor is the fact that we don't have, if you have like a consistent minus 30 winter for about 30 days, it kills off 3/4 of the ticks.
Yeah.
They freeze solid, they die off and whatever, but we haven't had any of those winters in a long time. So more and more ticks are surviving year to year to propagate more and increase the population. And as these temperatures stay high and the temperatures stay high moving north, the tick population, they transport and they move north.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting a lot of these southern ticks that are starting to move up. We're starting to see ticks in Ontario that we've never seen before. So it's just a fact of life. We have to get used to it.
Yep.
Be prepared.
Speaking of puns, if you want to see more puns, Kevin Callan did post his YouTube video of the day him and I were out there.
Yes.
There are some good ones. Some I'm proud of.
I was laughing when I watched it.
The caterpillar. I like that one. I can't remember what the caterpillar's name is. Jim. It was a woolly caterpillar.
Yeah.
Jim. Alrighty. So yeah, if you're out in the woods, keep track of ticks. Keep doing your tick checks because they're still out there. He's only got, Kevin's only got one trail left, and it's like a 24-kilometer trail or something like that.
He's got half a month to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's doing it this weekend, though.
Excellent.
He'll go do that, and not sure. He's debating whether to do it all. Now, people are saying just do it all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
Do a long day, just do it. And other people are like, oh, camp halfway through.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Well, let's see what he does.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a few episodes ago. There is about the homeless, Toronto and stuff. And there was a woman in Ottawa who lives in a canoe. Homeless woman.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there was a little article here. I mean, it's not like if you're, you know, your canoe, you've got to go do other things.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go shopping. You got to go, you know.
Got to do stuff.
And while she was gone, somebody stole her canoe.
Didn't just stole it. Like she had it tied up and locked up, and mm-hmm. they ripped out the chain. And
so a little article saying, in a very brief but upbeat dockside ceremony in the Rideau Canoe Club, Francis De Silva raised a bottle of Heineken beer and with the words, I'm christening this boat our boat again, because her original one's our boat. Brought the bottle down to the bow of her new-to-her canoe and set sail, or more accurately, paddle, into the waters that hopefully prove calmer than those she's recently had navigate. Looking on from the dock was Brian O'Hara, the stranger whose kindness provided De Silva with the vessel, replacing the canoe of hers that was recently stolen. O'Hara had owned his boat for more than 50 years, but hadn't used it in some time. When he read about De Silva's plight, he decided to give it to her. In an unsolved bit of vandalism, the canoe she'd purchased last spring was pilfered. De Silva had gone away to do some errands and returned to discover that someone had literally torn the canoe from the chain, securing it to a nearby tree, leaving behind only the canoe's crumpled dock plate. I think it was supposed to be deck plate.
Yeah, deck plate.
Meanwhile, the story of the theft moved at least a few readers. O'Hara was among 3 or 4 who reached out to offer her a canoe. I read this story, felt terrible for her, O'Hara said, and later on I thought, you know what? I have a canoe outside beside the garage. I'm not using it. If she wants it, she can have it. For De Silva, O'Hara's generosity supports her belief that being homeless in Ottawa, while not easy, is at least less challenging than in Toronto and Montreal, where she's lived in the past. The canoe, she adds, provides her some freedom, at least until the river freezes. I'm able to put my things in it and just go right along. But for now, Da Silva's life is at least a little better, and the canoe is wonderful, she says.
Nice.
That's, you know what, that's the whole bringing, giving you a better outlook on humanity sort of deal.
Yes.
You know, that there are still people out there that will help somebody out if they can.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like I say, dude's gotten this canoe that he hasn't been using forever. Give it to good cause.
Exactly. Yeah, and now she has something, some form of transportation again. And
but the fact that somebody would do that.
I know, they're jerks. And I guess part of the conversation is why can't she get into a shelter or into a home or whatever.
She doesn't
like
it.
You know what? This is her choice. She's out there out of her own choice.
Mm-hmm.
And post-COVID, there's a lot more people out living homeless on the streets. And so it's a tough situation out there. And
yep.
And you can only help so much until they refuse help, right?
And I think you look at the normal people that we see here. They got a shopping cart filled with one or two shopping carts.
Yeah.
And they got to walk them and pull them and push them. And if they feel threatened, they got to get away with those shopping carts.
Yeah.
If she feels threatened,
she can paddle across the creek.
Paddle across the river or wherever to get away from the immediate danger. Right?
Exactly.
So glad to see there's people out there like Brian O'Hara that will still give a helping hand when they can.
It's disappointing that the initial person was there to break and tear away the canoe and steal it, but it's nice that there's other people also that have kindness in their souls to reach out and help.
This one is down in Moorhead.
Where's
North
Moorhead?
Near Fargo.
Oh, okay.
Good friend dropped it off. A rickety old canoe, most of it in pieces, ready for the dump. A North Moorhead man has breathed new life into a 115-year-old canoe and made it waterworthy.
So, 1909-ish?
1908, 1909, yep. Roly Johnson spent 2 years restoring and rebuilding an old canoe. You can see how that was shaped there. I had to steam bend these and get new ones on, he says, pointing to the frame and the beams there he was doing. Johnson is known to many for his thoughtful sermons at First Lutheran in Fargo, and for years he taught canoe building at the church. He is no stranger to the outdoors. He is also an avid hunter, hiker, and canoe connoisseur. I didn't know there was canoe connoisseurs.
Apparently there is.
Oh, I tell you.
You can know your wine or you can know your canoes.
Right? It is so old and brittle, yet the skeleton and the framework, she is 115-year-old and still looks pretty good. The canoe was a gift dropped off by a friend. It sure don't float anymore.
No, it's in pieces.
Johnson found the original serial number and called Old Town Canoes. The very next day, they sent a bill of sale and work order, and it has all these stamps from 1908 and finished in 1909.
That's amazing.
The fact that they still had that.
Exactly. It's still on file.
I've got a boat motor from the 1976 that it's taken me till last year to finally get a manual for it. And he's getting sales orders and work orders.
Yeah, the original bill of sale. The original bill of sale.
Wow.
Did they show, in the article, did they show the bill of sale?
No. It says, Old Town found the original paperwork on the canoe, so Johnson went to work. 2 summers of steaming wood, remaking the gunnels and thwarts. We kept going, and it was awesome, he said. After long summer nights, the canoe began to take shape. He used fiberglass this time instead of canvas. If you're redoing...
If you're restoring or building...
119 or 15-year-old... canoe.
It's his own choice. It's his canoe. He can do what he wants, and I agree with that. But
doesn't make him right.
Yeah, you would think you'd like. I have a 1952, 1954 Peterborough canoe built in Peterborough, Ontario. It's canvas over cedar strip. And when I restore it, I'm going to try and restore it as close as original. Close original as possible.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to use Canvas. I'm going to pull it apart as much as I can, put it back together as much as I can. You know, it's going to cost like $2,500, $3,000 to restore it professionally. So it's like, it'll be a project.
Just sell one of the kids or something.
Exactly.
Hire them out or something. Yeah, my kid's going to mow your lawn for $50.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the $50. I can say he used fiberglass instead of canvas, and the real test came when the canoe met water. When we put it in the water, it was just a fabulous moment. I was with my eldest daughter, and it was incredible, he says. Johnson is breathing new life into the canoe, and a lot like us, it needed a little repair. Canoeing takes you places where the only sounds are in nature, and it is healing. Now this canoe is ready for a new chapter on the water.
Very cool.
115 years
old. I know.
Like, you know, he probably saw that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Well, let's just find out. It's probably, you know, from like the 70s or something. And then gets that surprise where they're like, oh, no, those things from the beginning of the 1900s. That'd be something. We haven't talked about evildoers lately.
Evildoers
and paddling craft. Because we've talked about drug runners.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's quite a few of them. It's like, it's a quiet way to travel. Middle of the night, lurking about in the dark and in the fog.
Doo-doo. Doo-doo. Canoe guy! So, a woman wanted to smuggle turtles across a lake and into Canada by hiding the creatures using socks in a duffel bag. She's pleaded guilty to a smuggling charge. She was arrested in June in Vermont as she was about to enter an inflatable kayak with a bag of 29 eastern box turtles and paddle across Lake Wallace to the border of Canada. Eastern box turtles are protected species and have vivid orange and yellow markings atop a dark brown shell. They are sold on the black market in China for $1,000 a piece.
Wow.
For a little turtle.
What do they do with them in China? Is it food?
Soup and medicine and, traditional herbal or just like shark fin,
yeah. Right,
sort of thing. The woman has pleaded guilty to a single count of attempting to smuggle eastern box turtles and faces up to 10 years in prison. Ooh. And as much as a $250,000 fine. This is no joke.
Wow. You can get less time for murdering somebody.
Right?
Huh. Wow.
Don't be a turtle smuggler. I mean, she would have only made 29 grand off the deal.
Yeah.
Well, she's,
when is she being sentenced? Or she hasn't gone to court yet?
She's just pleaded guilty.
She's pled guilty.
So she hasn't gotten a sentence.
So sentence is going to be coming soon.
Yeah.
We'll have to keep an eye on this one.
10 years in prison.
And potentially up to
$250,000 for trying to smuggle 29 protected species, turtles.
Yeah.
What are you in for, turtle smuggling? How embarrassing.
Yeah, he's telling stories. telling stories.
Embezzlement, murder, turtle smuggler. Yeah, you're not going to make it here.
You're too soft.
Yeah.
You'll never make it.
Wow, though. Like the things people think of throwing into like a canoe or a kayak.
Yeah.
And paddling into other countries and stuff like that.
I know.
Like, if anybody has any, wonder what that person is doing at 3 a.m. out there in a boat.
Yeah.
With no fishing gear or lights on.
Go in the day.
Yeah. They're not going to suspect the thing.
Yes.
Excuse me, man. Why do you have a duffel bag filled with lumpy socks?
Why is your duffel bag moving?
Right.
And why are you in here doing this at 2 in the morning?
Right. Wow. I can't believe 10 years and 250,000. That is...
They mean business. They right? definitely want to stop this. Well, you know what? There's enough of a problem, and if it wasn't if the time in prison and the fine wasn't big enough, people are going to take risks.
Yep.
When they hear this story, 10 years, $250,000, people are going to go, oh, yeah, I'm not going to smuggle turtles.
Well, that's like over in Africa. Hmm. You got some of these
like
rangers?
Wildlife
rangers?
Oh, yeah.
And you see they see a poacher? No questions asked.
Shoot the poacher. Boom. Yeah.
On the spot.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I mean, that's, they're but still, I mean, you're talking like
still
rhinos and elephants and stuff like that just for the ivory.
Mm-hmm.
That's, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
But who, yeah. The whole $1,000 for a turtle in China thing.
Yeah.
And like shark fins and all these different ancient.
If there was a sustainable way for them to do this, like, I don't know, grind up some concrete or something and eat that. Like, I don't know, find something different. Produce your own worms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, it's this.
Medicinal worms and concrete.
Because I'm giving
Dr. weird, Specht.
Yes, I'm giving weird examples. But, like, you know, there's what's called black bear gallbladders is popular over there. And, and it's like when they do these things, clearly it's not sustainable, obviously, for what it is. But still, when you are going to cut the fins off a shark and dump the rest of the body back in the ocean and you're only taking the fins.
Yeah.
Or you kill a black bear and you only take the gallbladder. Like, wow. That's crazy.
And how far back in the ancestry does that go?
Yeah, where does that start? How does that, is that created?
Anyway.
Yes.
Down south, a couple of hurricanes gone through. It's pretty devastating down there right now.
Yeah.
Same river that for decades has provided a livelihood to residents of Hartford, Tennessee, overflowed September 27th and embarked on a path of destruction that decimated a tight-knit community of rafting businesses near the state line. Tiny community along the Pigeon River is known to many as the last place to fuel up before entering North Carolina. Rafting in the Smokies is among 12 water adventure businesses in Hartford that have set up shop along the Pigeon River channels over the years. And by employing locals who've grown up on the river, these businesses are part tourism, part recreation, part education. So these businesses are employing the locals. It's a good bringing money into the community, that sort of thing. The river that the river that employees have become experts in navigating might never look the same. Course of the river has changed, says Jeff Polite, river manager for rafting in the Smokies. Instead of us being riverside, we're 200 yards from the river now. Like the hurricanes have totally changed these rivers.
To see the devastation, like so many online videos that I saw of the rivers changing course and the damage, the amount of water that rose and washed things away. It's like, I've never seen anything like it before.
Mm-hmm. It's totally devastating. So rafting in the Smokies is located along the eastern bank of the river, which flows into a bend with a channel between its business and a 10-acre family adventure island connected to the mainland by a suspension bridge. It's the 10-acre island which flooded, whittling down to 5 acres. So half that island's gone now.
Yeah.
And it was home to zip lining equipment and extra amenity for customer outdoor adventures. You know, let's go rafting and come back, use the zip line, that sort of thing. Expensive beams, cables, netting were destroyed and washed away by floodwaters, contributing to rafting in the Smokies' $1 million worth of damage.
And that is just one business.
It's just one business. The business salvaged some equipment from the main building along Hartford Road area, but areas where employees launch and pull rafts from the water remain unusable. So where they would launch from, you can't use. And then you go downriver where they pull out off the river. They can't use.
Yeah.
Right? So a problem that I'm trying to figure out and trying to see if it's the county or somebody that's going to come in and clear out the debris so we can have the historic channel back, he says. Many river guys have cleared debris before, running chainsaws in the middle of rapids to remove logs. But the debris brought on by recent flooding is not something that they are used to. I've never been in a situation like this, and I'm sort of out of my wheelhouse. I'm just trying to do the best I can, Polite says. It seems like I'm walking from one impossible to solve problem to the next all day, with the help of people from Chicago, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Florida. Businesses like rafting in the Smokies, along with rapid expeditions, rip-roaring adventures, and Smoky Mountain River Rat, contribute hundreds of thousands of dollars to the local economy. Now that revenue stream is cut off, I don't know how we're going to run trips being cut off from the river like that. So yeah, they're employing the people, the tourists are coming and, you know, going to the restaurants and the hotels and the campgrounds and gas stations and stores. And so it's all that money coming in.
People's lives and livelihoods, their homes are washed away. And it's hard to recover if you don't have work. And now this work is now damaged, washed away. Right. So people are going to have to leave the state or go elsewhere to find work again.
Well, it's like you. If you walk into your every day you go to the same factory.
Yeah.
Day after, and then one Tuesday morning you show up it burned down overnight. Yep. What do you do?
You're out of work. Yeah. How do you recover from that? Like, it's to recover your normal life and your possessions, and maybe you lost a family member. And now what? You don't even have work to go to.
Right? I mean, we look at this from our aspect of, you know, oh yeah, the rafting business is gone. But when you start branching out from that business.
Like there's restaurants and gas stations, like you said, and grocery stores. Like there's no money in the area. The jobs are drying up. Factories are damaged and roads are washed out. It's like...
So there's nowhere for these rafting employees to go.
Oh yeah, exactly. So there's no work for them.
Yeah.
They're going to, honestly, they'll have to leave the state.
Even if river debris is cleared, rafting companies still must overcome washed out interstate infrastructure that could keep tourists from traveling to the area, especially the collapsed portion of the I-40 near North Carolina line. Additionally, interstate delays could pose challenges for the business in transporting customers to drop-in areas. Typically, businesses bus customers roughly 5 miles upstream to begin their adventure, then even the drop-in areas will need to be rebuilt. Parts of I-40 could open as early as the next 2 weeks, but just within Tennessee. While this won't help tourists coming from the east, it could reopen Hartford along the interstate.
Yeah.
That's harsh. Now, there was a campground that was on the news, and it got obliterated.
Yep.
There is nothing but a pile of rubble left.
Mm-hmm.
And so people can't come there and camp anymore. But people from all over the states and that have been making reservations.
I've heard about this, yes.
Saying, you know what? We know we can't come. Use the money to rebuild.
Yep.
We'll see you
I'm booking next that year. Campsite for 2 weeks. And,
yep.
And keep so, the money. So they are booked solid. They don't have any place for people to go, but people are booking them solid.
Which is cool.
Yes. Right? So and it's a way for the rest of the country to help give and help provide.
Especially if it's somewhere you usually go on holidays anyway.
Yeah, it's recovery funds. Yeah. So it helps.
Yeah.
And it's a small amount for the individuals booking these sites that they'll never see and that aren't there. But, it's a great way to recover. It's a book a campsite, book whatever, book an adventure, and you're hopefully not going.
But hopefully they can build up, and then next year they reopen. And
it's a way to give back to the companies that are trying to recover.
Yep. There's a lot of different layers to whether there will be a whitewater rafting in the next year or even in the future, says Lucy Bramlett, operations manager at Ober Mountain Raft and Zipline. If it's not a good business model in the next couple of years, it could be something that isn't sustainable in the long haul.
Yeah.
Ober Mountain didn't receive as much damage from the flood, only losing 2 zipline posts sent across the river by the flood. The business has transitioned to a community resource outpost for the time being. They had a big open warehouse, covered warehouse thingy, and it's filled with like wood and bottled
supplies
water and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. As for the return of rafting, Polite estimates it could take months to a year before the river is even safe to use again. So that's just to use it, be safe. Yeah. That's not getting the business up
and exactly. Going. Can you imagine, like, all these trees and debris that are in the river now? Like, you can't run a raft down these rivers anymore.
No. And it's not something that you can just go, oh, let's just cut a couple of trees, boom, 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 and we'll just weasel in.
Rivers,
you know, like, I mean, a canoe, you could weasel in between a narrow spot. But when you're talking about rapids coming down, rafts coming down white water, you can't just get a little, aim for that spot right between those trees.
And well, the outfitters, if they do manage to clear the river, they'll still have to relearn, because there's rapids are going to be completely changed.
Yep.
Rapids that you have been running for the past 20 years, it's like, well, that one's gone, but there's a new one here.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's very different.
Yep. So all the best to them. Hopefully it all works out well. And I mean, that's all you can do, right? Just hope for the best. Speaking of, just to stay on the topic of whitewater rafting, the Flathead National Forest in Montana is looking to renew 5 commercial outfitter permits for the North and Middle Forks of the Flathead River outside wilderness boundaries. 5 outfitters are Flathead Lutheran Bible Camp, Glacier Guides and Montana River Company, Glacier Raft Company, Great Northern Whitewater Raft Company, and Wild River Adventures. They have previously been permitted for the past... They have previously been permitted for the past 30 to 50 years, depending on the company, according to a recent scoping letter. River usage surged in 2021, but has since leveled off. 2023, outfitters had about 69,592 service days on the lower middle fork. 2021, the number was 101,000. So that's like 31,000 different.
Yeah, and right? that's a lot of tourism people. Yeah.
As the pandemic closed the east side of Glacier National Park, compressing visitation to the west side. 2022, there were 72,000 service days on the lower middle fork. Prior to 2021, service days in the lower middle fork were far lower. 2015, it was only 41,000. 2017, busiest year in Glacier Park's history, was only 55,000.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden, boom, it doubles to 101,000 sort of thing. North Fork has also seen an increase in service days through the upper North Fork has varied a bit. A service day is measured, and you asked this one here.
Yeah.
A service day is a measure of use made up of one day or any part of one day on National Forest System lands for which an outfitter or guide provides services to a client. The total number of service days is calculated by multiplying each service day by the number of clients on the trip. Example, a 3-day trip with 5 clients is 15 service days. A 2-hour trip with 10 clients would be 10 service days, because that'd be 1 hour.
Yeah, and you're taking it, it's using the day.
Right.
And it's,
10 people. So that's 10 service days. So it all adds up. Permits expire April 2025. The Forest Service maintains renewing the permits is permitted under a categorical exclusion under the National Environmental Policy Act. So basically, they can say, you know what? Everything's been going swimmingly. Your permits are automatically renewed.
Or
they can go, yeah, you guys had a lot of issues. Not happening.
Or there's other demands for those river usage and so on.
Yeah. Forest Service also notes the services the outfitters provided for years. Outfitters and guides on the North and Middle Forks promote and teach river and bear safety practices, resource protection such as proper fishing techniques, river etiquette, and the unique attributes of this wild and scenic river. These permits are part of both sharing and protecting the national resource. The Forest Service is working on a new comprehensive river management plan, a draft of which it previously said would be due out this fall. The new plan is supposed to take into account commercial use as well as private use on the rivers. The Forest Service has extended the comment period until November 1st. So
I'm wondering when they... So they're not very clear here, but is the commercial use the outfitters,
yeah,
or is that private use? And the commercial use is other industry that may want to use the rivers, whether it be mining, logging, whatever. They're not clear.
Yeah, on. No, I took it as the
outfitting
is the commercial because you're paying for that service.
Yeah.
Private use would be like you and me going on a week long,
or owning a chunk of this land and saying nobody can use it.
Well, not using it, but you, I think just using it.
Oh, okay.
Not owning, using.
So just if we go on our own trip.
Yeah. So we go on our own trip. So I think the whole thing is there enough private users out there that are getting annoyed with
all the
rafting commercial outfitters?
Yeah.
Or are they saying, you know what? Okay, let's keep some outfitters, but maybe three instead of five. Sort of. That's what I got from the article. So they're looking for, you only got till the 1st of November to put your comments on. But I think that's what that's what I took from the article that they're looking at is, so should we give all five? Mm-hmm. Should we keep three? Should we keep two? Should we get rid of everybody?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it and tell us why? Just because you say get rid of them all because it should be, all private use.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Brings a lot of tourist dollars in. These outfitters bring a lot of tourist dollars in. They are the responsible users of the rivers and the lands. And so I think, obviously, they should be renewed, but it really depends on what government feels they want usage to be.
Well, and like they say, they give the example where there is the one, some of the outfitter guides are promoting,
Yeah, bear safety and river
fishing
etiquette.
Because people are still going to do it.
Yeah.
But with the outfitters, at least they're doing it properly.
Teaching them, proper etiquette.
Giving
proper
a benefit ways. Of the doubt. Yeah. At least they're doing it properly.
Yeah, exactly.
And being taught, no, this is how you do it. And, that's like going down the Grand Canyon. You got to bring that little bucket in your raft to your little poo bucket.
Whereas other
people are just going to be pooping everywhere.
Exactly.
They're still going to go.
Yeah. The outfitters are going to be doing responsibly.
Right.
Other people are going to be lifting rock and whatever.
Yeah. Pooping under a rock and a rattlesnake.
Mm-hmm.
Never a good idea. I won't do that a third time. if you do have comments to make or thoughts or what have you, they can be submitted electronically to comments-northern-flathead-hungry-horse-glacier-view@usda.gov.
Spell it out, Sean. Spell it out.
This show could have been a half hour less. USDA.gov with North and Middle Fork Flathead River Outfitter and Guide Permit Renewal Project in the subject line.
Or
by the time I've got done all that, I would just forget what I was going to tell them. Or just Google Hungry Horse Public Input. You can go see the article at the bottom is all what I just told you on how to submit it. Just copy and paste it. Google is your friend. So it's nice that, they don't have to. They don't have to give people the option to comment on it. They could just say, we're renewing everybody. Don't care if you like it or not. These people are, or they can just say, sorry, guys.
I can't imagine people having an issue with, you know what I mean?
Dude, is this your first time on the planet? Is your first day
you
here?
You know what I mean.
Is this your first day here?
It brings tourist dollars in. Like we talked about earlier for North Carolina and wherever, it's like gas and groceries and Airbnbs and hotels and motels. And there's a lot of money that gets injected when tourists do go into an area and enjoy the backcountry, the outdoors, and so on.
Yeah.
So it's a huge resource.
But, as well as I do, there's always going to be a couple grumpy gusses out there telling everybody to get the F
off
their lawn.
Get off my lawn.
Waving their fists. Yeah. Get off my river.
Exactly.
And it may not just be because the company is there. It's maybe because they're going through their Maybe they got a cottage or something there. Or you're going by my cottage. I see these rafters by my cottage. Yeah. And they're loud and they're making noises and they're having fun.
They're laughing. I don't like the laughter on the river.
You go have fun at your own spot. This is my spot. So, but no, you'd think in a common, everyday, ordinary, nice community, they're going to not have an issue with it.
I would think that. So these are people enjoying the outdoors. It's not going to be hoodlums. It's not like it's March break in on a Florida beach with all the, you know, the university and college students. This is people enjoying river rafting.
Yeah. And hopefully, like I say, being taught how to do it properly.
Yes.
And everything that goes with.
So. Sustainably.
Yeah. So hopefully they, but like I say, it's nice that they're actually giving people a say and saying, you know, yeah, I think you should keep it. No, I think you should get rid of it or cut it in half.
Yeah.
And then they take everybody's suggestions and hopefully come up with a good ending for it all. And with that, that's all I got. That's all I got this week. Fat bears, witches and pumpkins, salmon running up the Klamath River, people giving homeless people canoes, restoring old canoes, 115 years. Turtle smuggling.
I as we were talking, I watched the video of the guy showing the canoe and his rebuilding process.
Right.
The original. That canoe, he did a lot of work to it. It looks amazing.
It's probably at least 80% new.
Yeah.
By the looks of it.
Yeah. It looks fantastic.
Which brings the question, at what point is it no longer...
I saved three ribs.
Three ribs and the metal plate that says Peterborough Canoe Company or whatever.
Exactly.
So is this still? No. In my opinion at that point.
Something new.
Yeah, that's something brand spanking new. But
from the video and from the photos, I don't think he replaced. He worked on 80+%
Yeah.
But he didn't, there's a lot of the ribs that he saved. And so he had to buy, the gunnels were rotted. He had to build new gunnels and so on. And so there was some stuff that was replaced, but other stuff he just worked on and renewed, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So I know, good on him though.
Yeah.
Great project.
Oh, it's amazing.
You should watch that video a few times and maybe take some
pointers. I'm going to take some pointers. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Derek.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
I have nothing.
I feel like I'm forgetting something.
We always forget something. Like, we were in the middle of the start of Fat Bear Week, and I got home and saw an email when I got home after recording. It's like, Fat Bear Week, it started today.
Right? Oh, forgot about Fat
it
Bear Week.
It started the day we recorded, and we didn't know about it.
I wonder what things are going to happen next year's Fat Bear Week.
Could be interesting. Maybe Otis will come back.
Wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have to watch, and there's going to be a big announcement if they find out Otis was just, you know.
He was vacationing.
He was down having some tacos or something or whatever.
He has a polar bear girlfriend.
His wife said he couldn't go out for Fat Bear Week. He had to mow the lawn.
You're not going with those guys again. You're staying home. You're not going out with all your fat bear friends. We have to renovate the cave.
Oh, man. Alrighty then. On that note, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. If you go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.